No, I did it on the radio.
Yeah, what's he say? What do you dream about then?
Oh, all the dreams mean something, like, you know, you have to dig a bit deeper to find out what they mean. Like, I wanted, like, if you dream of falling, I wouldn't mean it means that. Do you know what I mean?
But right.
Anyway.
Yeah. She was good then, was she? I heard a wee bit.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It's approaching 5 minutes past nine on this Monday. It's the 20th of November, 2023. How are you all keeping? I hope you had a lovely weekend. And we look forward to your company over the next 3 hours on this programme and throughout the day here, of course, on your number one local radio station. Not a pleasant morning for travelling, that is it? Damp, wet and windy. Can't help anyone standing out waiting for a bus. But anyway, hopefully all get safe to wherever you're going. Right, we have our lines open for you right now for you to get involved in the conversation. Start your own conversation. What issues do you want to talk about? Is there something you wish to raise with us? Well, feel free to get in touch with us on 086 60 25,000. That's our WhatsApp and text number, and you can send your voice notes to that number as well. 07491 25,000 is the number to give us a call on. We have Caroline, of course, taking your calls, and Shannon on the program as well. And if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. and an early reminder for you that you can join us on the TV as well. Maybe you've got the house to yourself and you want to watch local content. Well, you can open up the YouTube app on your smart TV or your Fire Stick and put in Highland Radio Ireland and watch us live there on your big screen or across your mobile devices on the same app. We're also on Facebook, Highland Hub or Highland Radio News and Sport, and on X, formerly Twitter, of course. Right, now let's get to the newspapers. The Donegal News this morning. Eyebrows were apparently raised at a business conference in Burt when prospective Finance Minister Piers Doherty emphasised the challenge of low wages faced by workers in Donegal and the wider region. Addressing the concerns of the local Sinn Féin TD, the issue didn't sit well with delegates, many of whom insist that paying staff remains their foremost challenge. Terry Hughes, proprietor of a filling station on the Ballyshannon-Bleak border, shared his perspective with the Donegal News, stating that sustaining a business has become almost impossible. Getting staff is difficult and wages continue to creep up, he said. On to the Derry News this morning. And two young Derry women who saved two teenagers from drowning have been honoured for their bravery and their heroic act. Rebecca Ebbs and Zara Reid each received a prestigious Water Safety Ireland SECO Just in Time Award at a ceremony in Dublin Castle on Tuesday evening. The pair saved two girls who had gotten into difficulty in the water and were in danger of drowning at Buncrana Shorefront back in May. Congratulations to them. On to the Nationals now. Let's go to the Irish Times first. And the influence of the so-called, it doesn't say so-called, but it's labelled far right. The influence of the far right in Ireland is growing as tech companies, particularly X, fail to enforce their own guidelines against misinformation and hate speech, according to a new wide-ranging study of Irish online communities. Researchers from the Institute of Strategic Dialogue analysed 13 million posts from 1,640 accounts over the past 3 years and found misinformation is growing across all platforms, having originally coalesced around COVID-19. The study, funded by the European Media and Information Fund, examined the spread of disinformation, that's information shared with the purpose of deception, and misinformation, information spread regarding less of attempt to mislead by far-right conspiratorial figures in Ireland. It found the pandemic brought together diverse groups such as right-wing extremist, anti-vaccine campaigners and New Age spiritualists around various COVID-19 conspiracy theories. Although some of those conspiracy theories have turned out not to be as such, and I'm not partaking in it or amplifying it, but I do find it quite interesting when they do these types of studies. I mean, what kind of opinions and feelings are they talking about? Are they talking about people who perhaps didn't believe lockdowns were the right way to approach things? And you can see now sometimes the government might suggest that at times maybe those weren't the right decisions, or keeping children out of school, for an example. I think it's generally accepted now that that may well have been a mistake. Well, reading on here, these links didn't disappear when the pandemic was declared over, said researcher Aoife Gallagher. And again, I'm not contesting the findings of it as such. I would like to read the report. But they say that then people have conspiracy theories over refugees, asylum seekers and the LGBT community. And I think sometimes maybe what's seen as misinformation is really just other people's views that maybe others don't agree with. But as I say, that was the findings. That's on the front of the Irish Times. If you want a view on that, 086 60 25,000. I just think we have to be careful to be able to have open and honest conversations that aren't designed to be offensive, but where different views are discussed rather than different views, in inverted commas, being labelled as one thing or other. But anyway, on to the Irish Independent. The consumer watchdog has warned retailers it will be actively inspecting them to ensure they're not offering fake discounts in the run-up to Black Friday. And it's not just on in person, it's online as well. I had, just for the crack, believe it or not, I had put a number of items, three items that I was interested in that are hard to source locally, in my Amazon basket. And just as Black Friday was approaching, I went back into the basket and none of the items were available at the lower price at which I had put them in the basket. And now I wait with interest to see if the price returns down lower closer to Black Friday, because what seems to be happening online is that as Black Friday approaches in the weeks in advance, the prices of these three electrical items were increased up by 30 or 40 euro. And now I watch with interest to see how they come down and be presented as bargains at Black Friday, even though they may well be, and I'll report back to you, they may well be listed at the same price they were before they were increased, if that makes sense. But this focuses on in-person shopping here. The consumer watchdog has also called on retailers to tell if a competitor is offering fake discounts. The Competition and Consumer Protection Commission is the enforcement body for new rules that come in last year on price reductions. Retailers face fines of up to 5,000 euro if discounts they claim are on offer in sales, but it's not genuine. But I mean, it's not hard to make it genuine. And a lot of these discounts that you see on TVs and what have you are actually passed on, not necessarily from the retailer, but from the television provider. And I think at times it can be quite hard for companies to recoup that discount from those suppliers. On to the Irish Daily Mail, and Media Committee Chair Niamh Smith has demanded an explanation from the media regulator on Ryan Tubridy's new radio deal amid concerns it could threaten Irish jobs. The Fianna Fáil TD has said she will discuss with members of the Oireachtas Media Committee whether Cumann na mBan should be summoned to explain why it greenlit the controversial deal that will see Tubridy's new UK radio programme syndicated on five regional Irish stations. Ryan Tubridy announced this week he will be hosting a three-hour mid-morning show on Virgin Radio UK 5 days a week in the slot after star DJ Chris Evans. The programme will be simultaneously broadcast on Dublin's Q102 station every weekday, with a two-hour Tubridy weekend show to be broadcast on the Dublin stations, as well as on Limerick Live 95 LMFM in Meath and Louth, and on Cork's 96FM, which, as I say, raised my eyebrows a little bit last week, because, as I say, I do recall there were two radio stations that were the one radio station but had share programming, and I seem to recall the BEI weren't happy with it at all. And I'd be interested to go through some of the license decisions that were made, because I was almost sure it was brought up, and yet we have now one show going across five stations. So obviously attitude or policies have changed there. The Irish Daily Star this morning: the rate of increase of Ukrainians arriving in Ireland over the past 12 months was 10 times higher than the average increase in numbers fleeing to the EU over the same period, according to new figures. Official statistics published by the European Commission show that there has been a 72.1% increase in the number of Ukrainians seeking international protection in the Republic in the 12 months to the end of September 2023 as a result of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Over the same time frame, that number of Ukrainian citizens seeking refuge across the EU rose by 7.2%. So it rose by 72.1% here in Ireland and 7.2% across the EU. The figures were published shortly after Taoiseach Leo Varadkar said the government had to take action to slow down the number of Ukrainians coming to Ireland. It's the second highest rate of increase among the 27 EU member states over the past year, after Romania, where the number of refugees from Ukraine have effectively doubled to around 140,000 euro. But we aren't a great deal behind there either. And finally, Sorry, actually, there's two more pages to go. We'll go to the Irish Daily Mirror now. And a deal to release Israeli hostages in Gaza is close, Qatar's prime minister says. Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani said he is growing in confidence over an agreement which is understood to involve up to 50 women and children being freed in return for a five-day ceasefire. It's thought they would be released in small groups every 12 hours. There are around 240 hostages. A senior US official has suggested a ceasefire deal is needed to ensure the delivery of desperately needed aid in Gaza, and it is desperate over there listening to the WHO. We know it's desperate anyway, but just to hear it described as is shocking altogether. And lastly, Ben Dunn, who passed away from a heart attack on holiday in Dubai, had been given a clean bill of health after a full medical checkup a few months ago. This according to The Sun. The business tycoon, who was 74, was sitting by the pool while on holiday at the popular Jumeirah Beach Hotel with his son Mark when he suffered a massive heart attack. The paper says that the medical check was a follow-up in the operations he'd had to have stents put into his heart. He had been telling friends he was in great shape and had never felt better. One pal said he was delighted with the results of his checkup and said that he felt the best of health. Sadly, the heart attack was so sudden and strong that there was nothing anyone could do to save him. So that's Ben Dunn, who has passed away following a heart attack in Dubai. And that was a run through some of the stories in the newspapers today. There's about 4,000 of you, not shy on 4,000 of you, who are still operating under a boil notice. A boil water notice was issued for customers in Donegal supplied by the Cranford Public Water Supply and Downings. It follows consultation with the health executive. Ishka Aaron issued the boil water notice for the area supplied by the Cranford Public Water Supply, including Carrigart and Downing areas, to protect public health. It says approximately 3,734 people are affected by it, and it was issued due to disinfection processes issues at the Cranford Water Treatment Plant. Now, as I say, this has been ongoing for quite some time. So we got in touch with Irish Water to see if anyone would explain, you know, what actually caused this. Is everything still in place? What should people be doing? How can you protect older people? How can you protect younger people? When might it be lifted? What's the process once it's lifted? How long will it take? You know, basic questions that I think, you know, 4,000 of you deserve to have answered. But unfortunately, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, a six-word response. Apologies, I don't have a spokesperson available. So unfortunately, you will remain in the dark other than to know that you should not be drinking that water. And I tried to get some further information, but unfortunately, not forthcoming for you. But anyway, we'll endeavour to find out more for you. Right, let's go to health now. And a public meeting to address the escalating and continuing concerns at Letterkenny University Hospital is going to be held at the Mount Errigal Hotel Thursday the 30th of November at 8 p.m. Mary T. Sweeney's chair of the Letterkenny Hospital Campaign Group and AIM2 rep in Donegal and joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Mary T. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, listeners.
I can hear you. I can. Right. Okay. So, I mean, I think it's quite obvious the reasons, but that doesn't mean we shan't go through them. Just before we get to that, I mean, we do know that the health minister is coming to Donegal on Friday. He's going to be meeting with hospital representatives, GPs, consultants, one would presume. Any word of a meeting or any engagement with patients' representative groups or anything along those lines at this point?
I know a number of the representative groups have put on a request, as we have, and we also went through Charlie McConlogue looking for a request, but we've had no word back, but we remain optimistic. Yeah, we had intended inviting him to the meeting on the 30th, because at that stage he hadn't, when we arranged this, he hadn't yet confirmed a date of availability. He'd actually not been available for Donegal. So now that he has confirmed the date, but we will still be inviting him along on the 30th on that night as well, because we will have a range of people from advocacy groups in attendance.
I presume you welcome the meeting with the consultants and the interjection too by the consultants and the GPs, but you believe there is another group of people that need a voice in this crisis?
I think Letterkenny Hospital is a community hospital. It is a collective that we all own and share and must take responsibility for, whether it's for the fundraising to raise necessary facilities and services up there, or whether it's just to generally support the staff and the difficult work that they do. And as I say, that if one part of it, one part of the working team get a voice, then it must ensure that the full team is heard. So in order to get the best possible solution to address any issues of concerns, then you should listen to every voice in the room to make sure that all voices are heard equally.
And the sooner we get progress on this, the better, because it's very important, I believe, that this is talked about publicly. But at the same time, I don't, I'm sure you don't, and neither do the doctors or consultants want to cause any undue stress or anxiety in patients. We don't want to pee off the staff thinking that all we ever do is talk about negative stuff, even though I think it's generally accepted this is all about improving the situation for staff and so on. You know, like, we want to get to a point, don't we, where there's always going to be issues in an acute hospital, but where we can move past these critical problems talk about why it's such a great facility and why everyone who needs to go there should go there just as soon as they need to.
Of course, completely. And we wouldn't have the fantastic facility that we have if it weren't for people like Friends of Letterkenny Hospital down through the years. And I only did a small bit to support them many years ago when in the early days of getting the first CAT scan and that. It was many years ago. It was friends of mine's got me to do auctions and that just to raise funds. But every bit contributes, every bit helps. And likewise, when we had sick children in Crumlin, we did a massive big campaign, family members, to raise money for Crumlin at that time. So as I say, as needs must, and this is a big need for our community to come together and support not just the doctor's voice, but the patient's voice. And as I say, it was nearly 30 years ago I first campaigned to get an advocacy in the hospital. And I don't think one person is enough. And people need to be informed that there is a person there to help you understand the messages being relayed. And that's a really positive stand. But people often don't realise that there is somebody they can ask to come down and sit and listen with them when the doctor's explaining they're being told, to put it in layman's term that they can completely understand it. Because when you're sick, you can't speak out for yourself. And when families are nursing somebody or nurturing somebody that's been ill or sick, you do need support at that time.
Now, just down to the timing of this, and I ask this just with respect, but to have every card on the table. Obviously, we had the letters that came from the doctors and the GPs at the start of October, and now they've secured this meeting. Well, they had the meeting with Sealta representatives, and now they have a meeting with the health minister on Friday. And we heard also from GP representatives that, look, they're going to give it to the new year, and if things don't improve, all options are on the table, up to including calling the people out onto the streets. Is there any concern, or do you have any concern, that this might seem like a that we could be splitting sort of the movement, so to speak, in having this public move?
Absolutely, absolutely not, Greg. It's the exact opposite we're looking to do. We're looking to gel and to bring unity and community behind our doctors and staff of the hospital and the patients collectively. And that's what this is all about. And it would be I would like to think that our campaign in the snow and ice of last January or January past there is what really started to kick this all off. We have written to doctors. We've had awful problems with the emails because we don't have an approved email for health services. They've all bounced back. So can I please let all the doctors know that we have invited you, but we're having difficulties in getting these emails to go through in the health service email system. But we're writing out and posting letters to some of the key speakers and the doctors and consultants, and we'll be finishing that this week. Some of them have already been written to. And anybody that feels you need a voice or a platform, this is your opportunity, and we're providing that platform. We've also had people from advocacy groups like the MS Donegal group, and there's people from Parents with Children with Autism that I had been working with for the last year to try and get something collectively together. And then I had found out that there is an advocacy group that they didn't know about. You know, so this is really, there are basic things in our community we need to bring together to make a better cohesion or a service that's more visible and easy to find. Because I had to do quite a lot of research when people asked me to represent, to find them out about this or in relation to health services. There's quite a bit of trawling of the internet to do, Greg, as you well know. Yeah. And it's not always easy. So we need to make these services easier and have a one-stop shop. And that if you go to the front desk in the hospital, there's a free page there with all the groups in the Donegal community that you can look up. And if you have a condition, a particular medical condition, that you don't have to run to the department and get a leaflet, if it's to do with your liver or if it's lungs or if it's oncology, there should be a one-stop shop there at the front of the hospital. Like a citizen's advice, that if you have a concern, you go in there and you can get that without it being difficult.
Okay. One last difficult question, Mary T, but I do have to ask. Obviously, you're an election candidate. We are in an election cycle. Are other political representatives going to be invited to speak at this conference? Now, I know you will say it's not political that you're here as chair of the Letterkenny Hospital Campaign Group, but we are, as I say, leading up to the local election. So is this apolitical? Are other political figures being invited to speak?
Greg, I'm inviting today anybody that feels that they, and we have discussed an actual fact, Greg, I have no qualms about standing back from anything I do, because what I do, I'm doing for my community. I have no big political affiliation in the sense that I have an ego politically. This is about services that I have experienced, that I have personally been through or have helped other people to get through and to navigate the health services. And all that any of us in this committee, and the wonderful thing about your advice in the early days of this campaign was to keep it apolitical. So I've actually met some wonderful new people, and some of them don't even live that far from me, that we've come together because of your own mm-hmm. advice. And it's been fantastic. And some of those people have medical, quite severe or serious medical conditions themselves. So as you know, you have to be very delicate and how you can, you know, encourage people to speak about something so personal. And this is an opportunity that I would love the consultants, the doctors, the nurses that have spoke out to take your part on the podium. And what we have decided is, because often people on the floor are very emotionally involved and want to express a story, that the very fair way to accommodate their stories would be to invite people to write your personal, it can be a positive story. It can be a concern that you have in your experience in dealing with the health service, and write that story down. And if the minister comes, we will give them to him on the night. And if he doesn't make our meeting, we will photocopy those documents, those personal stories, and we will give them to the head of the SAILTA group, who is responsible to manage our hospital, and we will personally deliver them to the minister to say, these are the voices of the people of Donegal who need your support mm-hmm. to improve and expand on the services that we have in our hospital, to give us all confidence for the staff. If we can't retain our staff, Greg, we have to change tactics.
And just to recap again too, the reason, the reason why things like this are happening is because we heard from consultants, 11 initially, and they've sent another letter where there's 28, 29 of them as well. We were hoping to speak about that, but obviously with the health minister coming up. But anyway, in the first letter, it said that if something wasn't done really quickly, and I think at that time they were looking for a plan within the next 8 or 9 weeks, that there was a risk of service collapse at Letterkenny University Hospital. And that was a warning from the senior medical staff within there. So we can't ignore that. That can't be brushed under the table. We can't bury our heads in the sand and pretend it's not happening. When the consultants are saying that, we do have to talk about it. And I know it's not all of the staff are on board with this, and they just want to get on with the work. I get that. And we don't want to discourage anyone that needs a hospital to go to a hospital. But when we're hearing that from the consultants, it simply just cannot be ignored. And that's why this meeting is happening, I presume, Mary T. Sweeney, to row in behind them and say, right, okay, you know, we hear what you're saying, we share those concerns, and this is a public platform to talk about it too.
Completely, completely. And Greg, the reality is that somebody has to kick this off. And I would like to think that our meeting in the January past has kicked it off, because if we continue to... Our community, many people in the community are saying to me, we're losing our community spirit. There are so many people that have migrated into Donegal, whether it's from abroad or from other counties, that we must be cognizant of the responsibility we have to maintain a community strength and unity, to protect the main services that we have, like the hospital, like our community centres, like our sports centres. You know, we need to work together to retain. Those things don't just happen by chance. you know, and it's so imperative that, so if there's anybody that is really, I would invite everybody to write their stories, to bring them along on the night. Some people will get personally speaking from the floor, but the podium will be there for the advocacy groups to say what they feel they need, because that will be collectively, hopefully, the easiest way to get the most stories told that can be recounted and fed back to the minister.
Okay. That meeting takes place at the Mount Errigal Hotel on Thursday, the 30th of November. So it's Thursday week, and it's at 8 p.m. and it's an open invitation from the Letter County Hospital Campaign Group for...
We have set up a Facebook page that's just getting finished off today. So again, if people would look up the Facebook page, we'll put the details on there and the contact details. As I say, I'll have that finished by this evening, but it's just been set up there in the last couple of days, and we're just getting the Donna, the secretary, runs that. So she'll be able to communicate and contact anybody that gets on the Facebook page.
Yeah, all right.
Or they can contact through me.
Let us know. Okay, listen, thank you very much for that. I appreciate your time. That is Mary T. Sweeney there, who is speaking there in a role as chair of the Letter County Hospital Campaign Group. Right, again, don't want to keep talking about the same things, but my phone has blew up from people on various platforms talking about traffic into Letterkenny. Apparently, lots of you are late for lots of things, and a lot of messages saying the same thing. We were patient, but we're not moving this morning. So if you're sitting in your cars, I'm sorry, I can offer you no comfort other than to say that there is a reason. And that's there is a collision on the Polestar roundabout. So it is holding traffic up, causing severe delays. So on this occasion, it's not down to light sequencing or what have you, that there has been a collision on the Polestar roundabout, and that is slowing things down. So that's all I can say to help you understand what's going on there. Okay, so mixed reports on whether or not there was a collision. It was nothing serious in any case at the Polestar roundabout, causing traffic chaos. Some people have travelled through the roundabout and said there's no sign of a collision. So we'll just try and get to the bottom of that. And it will help if more of you, the listeners, get in contact with us. Did you see a collision there, or is it light sequencing? Please let us know. Right, Amory joins us on the programme now. Amory, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Greg.
We were speaking to... good morning to you, Amory. We were speaking to a lady last week whose son, older son, was waiting for an ENT appointment at Letterkenny University Hospital. Clette was her name, of course. You could hear the distress in her voice, and it was clear the anxiety he was going through. He had a particular condition that was causing great distress to him. You were able to relate to that conversation, Amory, were you?
Totally related to it, Greg. It's an absolute disgrace what the young people here in Inishowen and the surrounding areas has to go through. Waiting on an appointment to get in to see an ENT specialist, which doesn't apply to anybody here because they have to travel to Sligo, I think is the nearest hospital. My son was on a waiting list for several years. He has had 3 ENT surgeries since he went on the waiting list here. He keeps getting out these forms to say, do you still want to avail of the service? He signs them, sends them back again. Maybe in 6 months' time he'll get another one. Now, he was told that he could go cross-border, which he did. He went to a hospital here, crossed the border, and he had a procedure done, which was not a success. He paid for it himself, and he claimed it back through the cross border. Now, he's had another surgery done in London, which he funded himself because it was affecting his mental health, like his issues with mental health as well. I can relate totally to Colette. Is that the lady's name?
Yeah, and Colette's son had a particular condition that made her son's head, feel full all the time. It, you can hear your heart beating. You can hear your when you speak. You can hear your own voice. Is this the same condition your son had?
Well, the only way that I can describe it, Greg, is if you put your head underwater.
Right, that's exactly it. Yeah.
Yes, that sensation the whole time. So, like, obviously you've been using the pool and you've got water in your ear. Now, it'll go away for us, but that sensation is there the whole time, morning, noon, night. now, and no one seems to be listening at all to the condition or to the people. Like, I'm not a racist person, but I think it's got to the stage now that we have to be looking after our young people here in Ireland, because if we don't, what's going to become of them?
Mm-hmm.
To be suffering from mental health issues alone is a serious, serious condition. But when you have complications from another illness, which is adding to the mental health,
mm-hmm.
something has to be done. Now, to ring down to the hospital, you'll get, first of all, you'll get an answering machine. They'll ring you back, which they have no recollection of anybody ringing in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's just passed the buck from one to the other.
Now, the series, we'll get to that in a second, Anne Marie. See the series of operations he's had? Well, firstly, did the operation in Harley Street offer him any relief?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Okay, so he's improved now, has he?
Yes.
Okay,
not completely, but
his life's
improved.
More tolerable. Okay. But the series about the three surgeries he had here, and maybe it was four with the cross-border one, were they like grommets and stuff, or they just were doing the wrong thing, or what was going on there?
No, he only had one surgery here. He's on the waiting list. He had one surgery here, and he's had two since applying. What I'm trying to say is here, he's had three procedures done from he went on the waiting list here.
I get you now. One across border and then the other, of course, over in London. I get you.
Yes. And he went on the waiting list, yes.
We simply don't have the staff in ENT services to probably even maintain the list, let alone reduce it.
Well, you see, that's what the issue is.
Yeah.
But the issue is, why do we not have the staff? Like, we don't have an ENT specialist in Letterkenny Hospital. We don't have an eye doctor in Letterkenny Hospital. We have no facilities around here for anything.
Mm-hmm.
You have to travel to Sligo when you get to the opportunity of going that far. And, of course, we're going to be taking it. We're going to be taking it, surely, because we're waiting that long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It is...
I can totally sympathise. Like, it's not only when you're dealing with someone with issues with their ears, their nose and their throat,
mm-hmm.
it all goes under the one category.
Mm-hmm.
So it does. But you have to remember, they cannot fly because of the hearing issue that they have. There's a possibility... They don't know what's wrong with their ear. So there's a possibility that if they get on an aeroplane, it could be an inner ear thing. It could, you just can't fly.
And the thing about it too, Anne-Marie, is this, that this is similar to other issues that we've talked about in the past. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals across Donegal affected by this, but they're all singular voices. In other words, we have what's going on in your family and the awful stress and distress that's caused.
Yeah.
Then we have Colette's house, where she's gone through an awful lot with her son and the anxiety and the stress that that's caused. And you can dot those houses all across this region. But because they're individual cases, it's individual battles with the HSC. Again, it's if people could come together under one umbrella and say, right, it's unacceptable what's happening in ENT services, maybe something could be done. But unfortunately, at the moment, these all come across as individual cases. But I'm sure there are hundreds of people out there and hundreds of families that are going, it's the exact same for us. Or they've just got a 10 or 11-year-old diagnosed and they're wondering, is he or she going to be 18 or 20 or 25 before they get their problems solved? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it kind of suits, to some extent, the HSC, because these are all a big string of individual voices.
Yes.
You know, you get where I'm coming from. You don't have to be listened to. Because I just send you a letter, that shuts you up. I'll send Colette a letter, that shuts us up. But if there were 100 or 150 saying, look, enough is enough, we can't go through this any longer, then you can't ignore that voice.
But who's going to listen to that? What do we do? Where do we go? Or how do we all get together to sort this out?
I do understand. Well, Listen, the parents of children looking to access OT services and what have you, they got together and have made great inroads. So maybe something right. like that is required. Anne-Marie, I don't know, and I don't know who the person is to do it, but we are all our friends and our neighbours and our community. We're all fighting these individual battles on our own. And it's just so distressing because you're concerned about your son. Colette's concerned about her son, and there's other families all concerned about their loved ones, and they all feel alone and isolated, and it's horrendous.
Well, thanks be to God, Greg, my son is a lot better.
Good.
But he has gone and he has paid private for his treatment. What happens if you can't afford that? You suffer in silence.
Or you don't, and that's the tragic thing, because Colette's son... according to Colette, he's expressed in the past that he doesn't know how long he can continue living the way he's living.
Yeah.
You know, and I have to be really careful with how I say things. And if anyone has any issues like that there, they need to get help from the appropriate agencies. But we don't know the extent of this. And I'm not, I mean, that's from Colette. She's worried about her son far beyond this awful sensation he has. And stick your fingers in your ear. And see and go through an entire day with both fingers jammed tight into your ears. And that's given you some indication of what life is like. And there is no respite or recovery from it. And I don't think that even tells the full story, Anne-Marie, but it might give people an idea of what the likes of your son was going through and Colette's son was going through.
One instance is, now, roll up a bit, roll and stick it into one of your ears, not the two ears. I tried it here just to see what the experience of it is. And you can hear it's like a sensation all the time. It's like a ringing in your ear. Mm-hmm. So it must be intolerable to have to live with that. So
then it affects your equilibrium as well, because our ears are incredibly important to our balance, our, you know.
Exactly.
The slots. Okay. You're hoping Colette and her family get some resolution to their issues soon too?
I would love to hear that they get some kind of answers and some kind of treatment.
All right, Anne-Marie.
Or so.
Listen, thanks for that. I'm glad to hear things have improved for your son, but he had to go to Harley Street for that, and he was lucky to be able to fund it. It cost thousands, and as you quite rightly point out, not everyone can afford that. Anne-Marie, thank you for your time today. A huge congratulations to Councillor Troy Gallagher. Good morning to you, Troy.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to you and all your listeners.
You were nominated and bestowed a Freeman of the City of London by past Lord Mayor Alderman Vincent Keaveney and Col Brian Kay for outstanding service to public life and community. How does it feel?
That's correct.
How does it feel?
Yeah, it feels great, to be honest, and also really honoured, but at the same time, quite humbled. Yeah, something I never expected when I first came over in 95, moved to London in 99. And as I said to friends afterwards and in my speech, a few words after the investiture, I was thinking about mum and dad, my late mum and dad, who lived in Finsbury Park. Mum worked in London Zoo. Dad worked building the Barbican and on construction, building roads, etc. And it reminded me actually back then that that would have been inconceivable for many Irish people to have. And also for the many Irish people that built Britain and contributed over the years. So it's equally as much, I accept the word, on not just for what I've done, but for all the unrecognised work Irish people have done over the last 60, 70 years, Greg.
Yeah, and I'm sure your mum and dad were watching on incredibly proud of you as well. I got the impression that much of the work you do in terms of trying to help people in London, you would be doing anyway, but it is... it's good that you have, you know, elected office to be able to perhaps do it more effectively, if that makes sense. Like a lot of the issues you work on, you're passionate about outside of politics in any case.
Yeah, that's right, Greg. And I suppose being a councillor gives me that level of influence and access in order to achieve that the social change that's needed, whether it's tackling poverty, building more social housing. Bunhill in my own ward has the highest level of social housing built in the last 10 years. We're due to build another 200 social housing, 100 private to pay for the social. But equally, what is very important is to be able to give that platform towards Irish diaspora and Irish issues too around here. Because for the last 10, 15 years, whilst a lot of good work's been done by Tony McFadden, Tony Kelly, so many other people in the health sector and the construction, they don't always get the recognition that they deserve. And equally for the younger generation coming behind, they don't have that level of support for when they do have challenges. And mental health, you're over from my gala ball, Ewan Highland, and you know, I spoke then about the mental health issues, including the issue of suicide that affects young men, particularly in Mount Irish as well. And that is something that's not going to go away. And it's equally, as I said before, it's prevalent in Donegal.
Yes, of course. And then we have those that moved from Ireland over to London, made their lives there, and then maybe they acquire a long-term illness or disability or age. Mm-hmm. And even though they've lived there all of their lives or much of their adult lives, you can then start feel quite isolated and alone and, you know, what happens next, you know what I mean? That's also an area that you and others over there are really quite conscious of.
Absolutely. And I think you can be very, very successful and you can be on 6-7-figure salary in London and still be very lonely, even if you have a partner and family or even if you're a single. And loneliness is quite a silent killer in around London, which is why since the pandemic, many people have decided actually to leave London, to move out for a number of various reasons. I know people who have said, mortgage paid off, I'm retiring from whatever I'm doing, spend more time with family, moving back to Ireland. And, you know, I'm very keen for those people, with my work with the diaspora, to stop the brain drain. And if there are people that want to move back to Ireland, to be able to support them to do that and be able to contribute to Irish society and community, wherever they may choose to live. And that's equally important to continue to try and tackle immigration. But you and I have spoke before about young people leaving Ireland because of the lack of housing, more so than employment. And that's something we really need to get to grips with. And I think if there's anything that people like myself and other people who are involved in that sort of work have some of the solutions that can be utilised by government, local councils, etc., we should be able to do that there and feed that back and have some contribution from experience.
Okay, brilliant stuff. So, as a as a freeman of the City of London, what can you herd sheep across London Bridge?
I knew you were going to come out with that.
Well, I have to ask what the benefits are for. You know, it's all about the benefits too, Troy.
Well, there was in the old
you know
days,
me too well. Obviously, I'm too predictable. Go on.
In the old days, there was loads of benefits towards that there. So you could drink freely in the city and have a free travel home. You could be able to carry a sword around in order to protect the city or protect oneself. But now, yeah, the ceremonial is driving the sheep across the London Bridge. And on that too as well, I think what I would like to do this year, maybe my first one, is to work with, try and speak to Tim Kelly, who was honoured last year for Freedom for City of London, to see if we could do something for our charities, get a number of Donegal people to walk across with us on the sheep, driving sheep over London Bridge.
That sounds like another Highland Radio trip to me, Troy. I don't know what you're thinking. Okay, brilliant. Well, listen, you'll give us more details so we can publicise that when you get it all buttoned down, obviously.
Well, Greg, could I just say one quick thing as well, if you don't mind?
Please, go ahead.
I heard in Highland this morning that Councillor McMonagall raised the issue about more street lighting for Muckish Avenue. And I have to say, obviously, over and back to Muckish, and that is very much a live issue that was raised with me. And it is very, very dark at night. And given that we have got long-term residents there, one of the issues is there's cracks on the pavements and there's cracks on the sides of the road. And it is quite dangerous for elderly people walking across, slipping on wet leaves when there is no light. And I really welcome Councillor McMonagall raising this, and I hope the Lady County Councillors all join him to sort that out, because that is something that is very much on residents' mind and for their own safety and equally to try and create more lighting as a deterrent for anyone who may have less than generous or noble intentions in and around Muckish Avenue.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, thanks very much, Troy. Again, congratulations. That's Labour Councillor Troy Gallagher, who is Freeman of the City of London.